Welcome to the Nature Summit. I am your host, Lori Schwanbeck, and today's theme is the nature of leadership. And I'm so delighted to welcome our guest, Nina Simons. Nina is co-founder of Bioneers and serves as its chief relationship strategist. She is a social entrepreneur who is passionate about the power of women to transform the world, reaching racial and gender justice, indigeneity, and rekindling a sacred relationship to nature while co-creating a just transition that's regenerative, loving, and peaceful. Nina speaks internationally and co-facilitates transformative leadership offerings that integrate relational mindfulness, restoring the deep feminine, and the work that reconnects. She co-edited Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, and recently wrote the award-winning book, Nature, Culture, and the Sacred. A Woman Listens for Leadership. I highly recommend this book. She was named a recipient of the Goy Peace Award in recognition for her pioneering work through Bioneers to promote nature-inspired innovations for restoring the earth and our human community. So welcome, Nina.
Thank you so much, Lori. It's great to be here with you.
So there is so much more that I could say by way of introduction. You've had such a tremendous impact on the planet, the life on the planet, and my life. But why don't we just start with Bioneers itself? Some people might not be aware of what it is. So if you could share a little bit about what it is and what its mission is.
Sure. Bioneers is a nonprofit organization that I started in partnership with my husband, Kenny Ausubel, in 1990, believe it or not, 31 years ago. And we began it really in response to the pending climate crisis, which we could see coming. But also, I think we started it because we were so aware that the mainstream media covers so much of the bad news and so little of the good news. And so Bioneers identifies and then features people from all walks of life who have visionary solutions and strategies for healing our relations with ourselves, each other, and the earth. And so it's a very broad spectrum field. And we love finding people many folks have never heard of and lifting them up. Mm-hmm. They're always very diverse. And they're diverse not only in terms of their ethnicity, but also by age and by discipline. And really, we look at the whole system in recognition that we are in a time that we have been heading towards for some time. We're in an inflection point where we actually need to reinvent everything about mm-hmm. how we live on Earth and how we relate to ourselves, each other, and the Earth. So everything about human civilization is really up for renewal and reinvention. And so Bioneers is a place for solutionaries. You know, it's a media site.
I like that.
And we produce conferences and a radio series and podcasts. And so we produce a lot of media, and it's a wonderful resource for when the bad news gets you down. Go to the bioneers.org site and you'll get lifted up.
Well, and certainly that sense of possibility, I think, is so important when we are thinking about how to stimulate change and the motivation to summon our internal and external resources to galvanize that and to move forward. So I think it's so important just as a change strategy too, not just yes. feeling better.
Oh, absolutely. No, we're really about inspiring folks to do more and to connect with each other. And in many ways, we started it really to leverage the pressure for change so that people would get psyched. And there are so many connections that people make at Bioneers. And one of the things I love about it is that it's a whole system perspective. So, if you happen to be really interested in food systems, you might come in through that facet, but then you discover how it's related to social justice and climate change and education and everything else. And so there's a beautiful way that it's a whole system that we're lifting up so that people can have a vision of what's possible. because of course, as Black Elk said, without a vision, the people shall perish. Mm-hmm. And because we're all products of a deficit culture, the media tends to cover the bad news. And we need to lift up the vision of where we can be heading so we can all coordinate and collaborate to get there.
Right, and live into that.
Exactly.
So you have been exposed through Bioneers and your work in the world to the joy and beauty of people working in support of restoration and healing, regeneration. And of course, you've also been exposed to the crises that we're facing. And I imagine that stretching of the heart of both the joy of possibility and the grief of what is being lost. And as you've said, the systems, the deficit perspective and deficit systems, the grief and rage. I wonder about that stretching of your own heart, Nina, of both the joy and the grief. Like how has that changed you, being kind of in the front line of that rawness?
It's such a good question, Lori. It is continuing to change me. And I inwardly refer often to the Alice Walker saying that she embraces her grief and her sorrow because it gives her greater capacity to feel joy. And I feel like part of the work that nature is asking us to embrace in this time is to really befriend our emotions. You know, I've heard it said that part of the way nature communicates with us is through our emotions. And I believe that, actually. And
I just got chills when you said that. It's like, oh, yes, yes, that way too.
Right? And so, and this whole idea that we have good emotions and bad emotions, we need to toss that out the window and compost it, because all emotions are there for a reason. And there's a way that we've been evolved by Mother Life to have emotions so that we're in communication with the systems around us. And frankly, I think much of the illness and disease and anxiety that folks are feeling in the world right now is because we've been traumatized by not giving ourselves permission to feel what's truly there. So I try to embrace both. You know, I mean, there are times when I just get really, really sad. I mean, you know, the loss of coral reefs in the ocean and the poisoning of whales and dolphins and sea turtles from plastics makes me crazy personally, and as does the loss of so many species. And at the same time, you know, I'm fond of a metaphor that we are living through a time when one system is dying and another is being born. And we are all challenged to be mindful about where we put our attention in that inflection point, because if we stay focused only on the mainstream media, that's all about the system that's dying. And frankly, the emergence of new movements and new efforts and new innovations and new ways of living and being that are often wedded to ancient indigenous ways of living and being are incredibly enlivening and joyful. And so I try to, you know, one of the gifts of being a co-founder of Bioneers is that I have great access to all the good news and all the great shining people. And I find that I want to encourage people, not because I'm advocating for Bioneers per se, but in whatever ways we do, to give at least half our attention and maybe more to the world that's being born. And some of us may feel called to help be doulas or you know, death doulas for the civilization that's being born. And some of us may feel called to bridge between the old world and the new world, and others are called to lift up what's being born and emergent. And, you know, so I think my spectrum is stretching is probably the best answer I can offer. And I lost my mother very suddenly about a year and a half ago. And so there's a lot of grief. And some of the grief is universal and some of it is very personal. but I try to feel it all.
It's one of the things that strikes me so deeply when I listen to you speak. You lead with emotion, mm-hmm. and you know, your care and love for life all around you is so palpable and so real. And I wonder, in your work exploring leadership, what role do you see emotion and the expression of emotion having in, especially people who are in leadership roles?
Well, that's a great question too. I mean, my sense is that in this time of so much reinvention of what the masculine and feminine means, because we've all inherited some very warped definitions of those gender roles, and we're living in a time where, thankfully, many of us have the freedom to really choose our identities and craft and develop ourselves to be as fully human in facing this time as we can. And as leaders, I find it especially important to be mindful and reflective about the human qualities in me that are masculine and feminine, and how I can have as much of a balance, as much of a full toolkit or backpack to draw from of all my human capacities. I sometimes call it full spectrum leadership. And, you know, regardless of what gendered body we may happen to be in at this time, I think that reclaiming our emotions as leaders gives everyone permission to be more human. And frankly, you know, as women, we have inherited a legacy that said, don't show emotion in public. I mean, I've been teaching women leadership for 20 years, and 9.5 times out of 10, the women who are leaders who start to weep about something are always apologizing. Yes. And, you know, I heard an incredible story from a young woman who was a union organizer. And she told me about being in a meeting where she was the only woman, and she started to cry as she was leading the meeting. And she refused to apologize. And she said, and she held her full dignity and authority. And she said, I'm crying because I care so much about this. And I would encourage you to care as deeply as I do, whether you express it in public or not, because this is where the power of change lies. So, you know, I try to practice what I preach. And honestly, I mean, in many ways, I was gifted with being highly empathic and highly relational myself. But that comes with its own challenges, just like every gift we humans get. So I'm learning a lot about boundaries right now and how to not take in everybody else's stuff, you know, and how to make sure I'm sort of cleaning myself regularly on an energetic level, because there's a lot of stuff lying around.
Certainly. Yeah. And the ability to have that full spectrum leadership. And when I think about leadership, it's really how we influence others, right? Regardless of your title or role. And so by standing in the truth of one's emotion, for an emotionally evocative topic you're talking about, there's something real and genuine. And I love what you said, that the emotions are nature's way of attuning us to the world around us.
Yeah. Well, nature's way of speaking through us, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, the idea that we as humans are separate from nature is part of what we need to shed and compost and leave behind, because we are nature. And so how does nature communicate through us? Well, emotions are one big way. And I think our body awarenesses are another big way, you know? And these are realms of our human experience that have so often been relegated to the quote feminine, when in fact, they're part of all of our human experiences. And as you said, I mean, if leadership is influencing others, and also, I believe, lifting others up into leadership as an essential part of what we're called to do right now, because we're in a time when we need everyone to be leaders. And so part of my work has been to reinvent leadership and understand that we've all inherited some very faulty definitions along the way.
Certainly, I would say that's true in our Western culture primarily. And I wonder if your exposure to Indigenous cultures and just cultures throughout time, is there any model that you draw upon that draws forth more of this full spectrum leadership approach?
Well, that's a wonderful question. You know, there's an Indigenous model that suggests that many Indigenous cultures have embraced, that suggests that a pattern for whole personhood means if you imagine the four directions within us, then what they hold is that one direction, one pole of that is the masculine and feminine, and another pole of that is the adult and the child, or the elder and the child. And actually, you know, when you think about it, in Western culture, we have tended to devalue the feminine, the elder, and the children, right? And so, and yet, they all have human qualities that I believe we need to reclaim in leadership, in showing up fully in this time, and that. So I, you know, that's a model that I love. I tend to be a pattern seeker, and I love that pattern because it gives me a way to say, have I fed my child enough today? Yes. You know, have I listened for what my child has to tell me today? And am I listening for, you know, again, regardless of what gendered body you might be in, the feminine qualities, am I receptive? Am I listening? Am I, you know, am I focusing first on relationship and then on task? I think that's one of the big ahas to me about about how we're all transforming leadership, is that if we connect first on a really human level, then the work gets easier and is better done.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of research that's bearing that out now in the realm of psychological safety and interpersonal neurobiology and its effect on brain processing. So there's, like, it's being legitimized, if you will, through the science field. But we feel it, right? You know.
Yes.
It.
Yes. Yeah. I love how that keeps happening. Science is catching up. But it doesn't hurt to be affirmed that way.
And I want to bring in the poetic here. You have such a lovely way of describing the feminine in terms of influence. And you talk about, you know, the grass or flower growing through the concrete, or the river that goes through the canyon. See that movement towards where the opening is and not being pushed or rushed. And I just, you know, we can go into the scientific, again, lovely to be validated and have that mental model. And then there's the feeling that comes, like, oh yes, that movement into the opening, that being and listening to what is instead of forcing.
Well, exactly. And thank you for naming that, Lori, because it prompts me to want to bring in the sacred here, because this is another model of whole human that I refer to all the time, which is, again, a fourfold way. It's the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to have all of me present, because what a gift it is to be alive at this incredibly transformative moment. And I want all my capacities fully awake and on board. And so what you're referring to came about because there is a remarkable shaman who I periodically approach for guidance. And after a series of spider bites on the front of my shins, now I live in an area with a lot of spiders in the high desert, but I asked her, I said, what does this mean? And what do I need to understand about it? Because I kept getting bitten on my shins. And she said, Mother Life is teaching you to stop meeting conflict from your masculine side. And I said, wow, what does that mean? And what does it look like? And she said, well, masculine meets conflict with force and aggression and rigidity. And she said, the feminine meets conflict altogether differently. Mm-hmm. Think of how grass grows through the concrete, as you said, and how rivers cut through canyons. And so with this gentle, persevering, flexible, very different approach, Mother Life is telling you that that might work a lot better for you. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a spider bite on my shin since. So I've been paying attention. It was a beautiful lesson. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that I knew to ask.
And that humility, right? I don't know. I want to ask and to seek the wisdom that comes, that can come through a person, a healer, or excuse me, through nature.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I was thinking about this interview, Lori, and I was realizing that for me, nature is the most perfect embodiment of the sacred that I've ever encountered. It's mysterious. It's incredibly complex. It extends out from the earth and into the cosmos, you know? And I grew up kind of agnostic. And what I learned was that nature was the place that I went for balance and learning and solace. And, you know, so in a sense, it's, she's my religion.
I'm with you. Do you have any practices that you do, any personal practices you do to listen or attune to earth wisdom or to connect?
I do. Well, I have a regular morning practice, which I have been doing, that's a mindfulness practice, which you would appreciate being a mindfulness teacher. And I've only been doing it for about 4 months. But I'm not sure how I would be surviving without it. Mm. And that practice is very simple in many ways. I mean, I have a space that I sit at with an altar that has sacred objects that mean a lot to me. And I light a candle and I go inside and I breathe really deeply and slowly. And I breathe in. Listening, and I breathe in receptivity, and I try to attune my whole body and sensorial instrument to what's coming in, and I breathe out gratitude. So that's a practice that I love, and I am a great advocate for inventing your own rituals. You know, and so I've done a lot of that to help heal my relationship to my body, to help heal the negative judgment voices that lived inside me, and to turn more purposefully towards cultivating myself into the kind of leader I've always wanted to become. And I've learned that largely by example and by witnessing, you know, who are the leaders whose shadow side really turned me off, and who were those who just lit me up like crazy, and why? And that first book, Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, I'm very proud of it because it has some men in it. Mm-hmm. And really, it's about how are we reinventing leadership so we can wholeheartedly embrace the practice of self-cultivation to become who we were born to be.
Who we were born to be and what the world needs, what life
needs. Oh, exactly. Needs, right? Yes, yeah. Yes.
You know, you've talked about one of the biggest crises our planet faces, if not the biggest crisis, is a crisis of relationship. Mm-hmm. And when I hear you speak right now about, you know, that kind of connecting in with yourself, that the body, heart, mind, spirit, and that cultivation of the self. It's almost like relationship with the self mm-hmm. becomes really core.
Well, it does. And, you know, some folks might have a response to that that says, that seems very self-centered at a time mm-hmm. when the earth is in crisis.
Right,
And I think that's part of the negative conditioning of the deficit culture that we've all received. I actually believe that we live in a fractal universe, and that the way we treat ourselves and the way we treat each other and the way we treat the earth are all different octaves of the same relational imbalance and the same kind of, you know, trauma that I believe in many ways we've all inherited from conditioning that we never chose, but it influenced us nonetheless. And it caused us to tend toward perfectionism, overproductivity, not enough rest, focusing outward and not inward. And, you know, I believe we actually have a responsibility to the earth, each other, and ourselves to heal ourselves inwardly in order to be the best leaders we can be. Because, as I said, you know, those self-judging voices or those habits that tend to banish parts of our humanity, I believe are what helped us get into this fix in the first place. And that we probably wouldn't have the degree of alienation and of polarization and, you know, lack of a broken relationship that we have with the earth if we tended more to our inner relationships.
I agree. And there's some quality of othering that we do to ourselves. We cut off parts of ourselves. We like the other, whether it's other people, other parts of nature. So that divisiveness, I think, creates so much suffering.
It does. And, you know, what you're saying, Lori, reminds me also that, you know, for many of us who may be in women's bodies at the moment, we have been culturally habituated to imagine that it's not okay to cry, it's not okay to feel sad, it's not okay to have mood swings, it's not okay to get angry. And one of my favorite teachers is a woman named Carla McLaren, who wrote a beautiful book called The Language of Emotions, which I would commend to everyone. And she says, anger is nature's way of telling you that a boundary has been bypassed, right? And what if, and you know, and as men in leadership roles, you know, many men have been conditioned to understand that they're not supposed to care. They're not supposed to be empathic. They're not supposed to relate to people in a human-to-human way. They're supposed to be all task-oriented and productive and all of those things and competitive. And that's what's breaking our world apart, I think. You know, if I have to look for sort of one trim tab that I could wave a magic wand, it might be that we all heal our relationships to the masculine and the feminine. And I think it would heal everything.
And hopefully that is happening right now. I hope to, like, you know, there's good trends in that way.
Yes. And nature's a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I'm curious about this for you, Nina, with, you know, the species loss, habitat loss, climate crisis, pandemic. There's a lot of pain and trauma, really, that life is going through right now on the planet. As students of the earth and cycles and indigenous wisdom, how do you hold this time on our planet? Do you see it as, you've talked about it as an inflection point. What does that mean for you?
Well, in many ways, I believe that we are a very immature species. And I see this as, you know, some of our great psychologists and cosmologists have talked about how you kind of have to go through a near-death experience in order to fully grow up. And in many ways, I see this time as that for our entire species. And you know, how we each relate to it and whether we choose to respond to that wake-up call in a way that is turning towards what it's guiding us to awaken to or not, is obviously an individual choice. You know, we have a lot of habitude as humans to turn away from pain and discomfort, you know, to avoid it, to ignore it, to sweep it under the rug. And another one of my very favorite teachers really is Gabor Mate, who talks about how trauma is not the things that happen to you, it's how you relate to the things that happen to you. And that's a very important distinction. So I look at this time as both a time for humanity's great awakening, a time when we need to embrace system shifts, yes, that are awkward and uncomfortable. We need to cultivate our own capacities to live with uncertainty, because none of us knows how this is going to turn out. And at the same time, I really embrace and love the Indigenous perspective that said the Creator put us here to celebrate life. And so I think we have to do all those things at once. And I know we're capable of it, but it requires a lot of shedding of patterning. And I think that requires practice and strong intention and clear vision. And I know we've got it in us because nature made us to be able to do this. And I, you know, on some level, it sounds a little woo-woo, but I really do believe that every human alive on the planet right now is here because they are suited for this time. And we are. But it's going to require a lot of choices and a lot of discipline. And we're better typically at applying discipline externally than applying it internally.
Yes.
Right? But the benefits to applying it internally are so huge. And it does lead, in my experience, to both a more joyful and meaningful and fulfilling life, and to being able to show up as our best selves, which, you know, I imagine is what we all want to do. What else are we here for, actually?
Well, it's you know, it's a very full system response to a full system crisis.
Yes, exactly.
And I wonder, for you, you've been exposed to so many teachers and thinkers in the regenerative and healing movement. Who or what right now inspire you in this full system transformation inflection point that we're in?
Well, I mean, I have to say that I am most inspired by the leadership of women of color right now, youth and women of color. You know, that the movement for Black Lives is doing amazing work in this country. And I particularly love the way that they have adopted an all-inclusive kind of feminist perspective that says, hey, this is for everyone. This is not just for Black people. This is for, you know, living into and co-creating a system that is liberatory and truly democratic and also regenerative. And Native women, frankly, blow me away. There are so many women leading work in the climate change movements and in the rights of nature movements and the water protectors. And then there are young people like Greta Thunberg, who just, I mean, she lights me up every time. And here we are hearing incredible spoken truth from a young woman whose autism has turned out to be the greatest gift to humanity. Mm-hmm. Her autism, her commitment, and her passion and her love that we could ever have wished for. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't great male leaders out there. Of course there are. And there are lots of other movements that I love. But I do think that because it's a whole system time of true transformation, that getting focused on any one system in a way is a trap, that it's important to, for me anyway, to keep in mind, yes, we need to transform our political system. And yes, we also need to transform our economic system and our educational system and our gender equity and everything else, right? And business and, but they're all connected. They are all connected. And it helps to remember that because, you know, there is no one system that's gonna, in a way, again, I feel like I keep encouraging myself to cultivate a both-and worldview that says it's important to notice where I'm most drawn to put my time and energy and attention, and at the same time to recognize everyone else's work in every other field is equally needed. You know, so it's a time to embrace each other's leadership and not to get stuck in any kind of either or binaries or polarization, because there's way too much of that going on right now.
Absolutely. And preferencing one area of interest or expertise or passion over another. It's,
yes.
You know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking of just, you know, when you're wanting to plant a garden, you've got to have somebody who's going to be able to till the soil and who knows about pH levels in soil, because it depends on what you want to grow. And some people know about seeds, and some people know about how to pair the plants in a certain way to, you know, minimize pests. I mean, there's so much is needed right now.
Yeah.
And so you're drawn, wherever that, whatever lights you up, wherever that emotional resonance is, mm-hmm. I think is an important place to orient your attention.
It's true. And what you're saying, Lori, reminds me that in many ways, for me, one of the greatest, deepest learnings that I've had about leadership from both pioneers and the natural world is that diversity is essential for getting through this, for surviving and thriving, and that it's way beyond any kind of political correctness. That, you know, in nature, the ecosystems that survive extreme conditions are the ones with the greatest diversity of species. Mm-hmm. And that's not only about, you know, ethnicity and class and race and background, but also about discipline and about introverts and extroverts and all the different ways we have of problem solving and showing up. You know, that embracing diversity is one of the keys to the culture we're co-birthing, I think, at this time.
Absolutely. On all levels, all systems.
Exactly.
It's very exciting.
It is.
Well, I wonder, just as a way of wrapping up, I'd love to speak with you all day. if there is any in your role as a leader that lifts other people up, and I know that's so important to you, any words of guidance that you would say when someone looks out into the world and feels overwhelmed with the amount of suffering and struggle, what guidance would you have to support them taking just that next step?
Well, a few things. I think that, for one thing, this may sound simple, but I would encourage folks to give yourselves permission to fully feel what you're feeling. And if that means that you go take a nap in the middle of the day, then go take a nap. If it means that you need to go bang on a wall or a pillow and vent your outrage, do that. You know, if it means you need to take a walk in the woods and cry, then do that, because your tears will be a gift to the mother. And it will help you find your equilibrium again. And also, again, just be aware of your choice in modulating your media intake, uh-huh. because it's terribly demanding and seductive right now mm-hmm. to spend so much time on the internet or with TV or whatever it is. And there's some great media out there, and there's some really awful media out there. And honestly, what we need to be doing right now is listening to each other and the natural world for guidance, and being willing to in a dignified way, acknowledge that we don't know all the answers, mm-hmm. and practice humility, and practice a great phrase that I heard a teacher say once, which is practice discomfort resilience.
Right? That's the world.
Right?
Yep. Like,
oh, what a good skill. What a muscle. I want to build that one. Yeah. And it's just like bodybuilding. Anything we practice gets stronger. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the world, the inspiration, the lifting each other up, and your time today, Nina. It's been such a gift to all parts of me.
So, oh, Lori. Well, thank you. It's been really a delight to be with you, and I'm grateful to participate in the Nature Summit. And for all everyone's doing out there, thank you for all your good works. You know, and here's to Stacey Abrams and Elizabeth Warren, and thank heavens for the people of color voters. And, you know, it's all true, all at once.
Coming together, and, rising up.
Indeed.
Thank
Here's
you.
To the great uprising. Thank you, Lori.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.